Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. Today I'm joined by Donald Hutera, critic and arts writer for The Times, to talk through some of this week's theatre and dance productions. We'll be eating our way to happiness in one-man play Fat Man, we'll have a classic Greek tragedy in the form of Antigone, and we'll discuss Jerome Bell's classic dance work, The Show Must Go On, which is currently on tour. That's all to come here on The Arts Review on Monocle 24. Donald Hutera, welcome to Monocle 24 and the Monocle Arts Review.
Thank you.
We're going to begin at the Barbican, where a run of Sophocles' Greek tragedy Antigone has just ended, to head off on tour across Europe and then on to New York. This is Belgian director Ivo van Hove's take on the play, with original text from Canadian poet Anne Carson. And Donald, it's a bit of a big number as well, because it's got a bit of a star.
It's got a bit of a star. Juliette Binoche returns to the Barbican after playing Mademoiselle Julie a few years ago. And she is the thing upon which this production is pinned. And she's actually very good. She's not as...
There's almost a surprise tone there when you say that.
You know, when film people... She's a very luminous cinema actress. And she can handle the role. She's a bit shrill and a bit shouty and strident at times. But she's also passionate. She's very good. She's good. But I'm hesitating because the production overall left me in a very middling state.
Why?
Well, I found it ponderous and some might say measured. I sort of drifted off. I listened to it.
You drifted off.
I drifted off. I didn't shut myself down from it. It's a very pared down production. It's very much, you know, it knows its themes, the difference between a power play, between a young woman who wants to, or a young woman played by Binoche, who's 50, but it doesn't matter the age, you know, she's ageless. Who wants to bury her brother, who's a traitor to the state, but the state just wants his corpse to rot. So there's a political resonance to it, and it's directed in a very grand yet streamlined way by Ivo van Hove, who's big hit right now in the West End is A View from the Bridge. Mm. And it's interesting to see these two productions side by side, because The View from the Bridge has the weight of inevitability of tragedy. And I don't think this production does. Its ambiguities aren't sharp enough or powerful enough. And I think that's why I drifted off.
And as we said, that, you know, it's an original text from a Canadian poet, Anne Carson. Obviously the script matters, the text matters. But with a story like this, which is known already, how much does the text matter in this?
What they've done is they've turned it into a modern dress ritual. And Creon, who is Binoche's character's uncle and her future father-in-law, potentially, is a corporate bully, a quiet, contained corporate bully. And there's also a resonance there, because it's a bit chic, the whole thing. You know, Binoche is first seen striding across a desert landscape. There's a very large screen behind her, which either has physical landscapes or cityscapes, and she's wearing heels and her dress is blowing in the wind. It's actually rather English patient in its way. The text that works the best is when Catherine Pogson, who's been, she's an experienced actress, she talks about the miraculousness and monstrousness of man. And there's something so pinpoint sharp about that, and it's repeated. And there, again, the weight of the words matter. But I'm not sure about the rest of it. I don't want to say that it's blustery or valueless or worthless, but it doesn't feel essential. That's the thing. And to go back to that weight of inevitability, I was talking to two Greek people, and they know their tragedy, apart from the fact that they're involved in theater. And they said that it was far too casual. And I think that's a danger when you update something, that it doesn't have that gravitas that it might need. But it's a good production, and it is worth seeing.
Let's then actually compare it to another sort of updated Greek legend, this time of Orpheus. This is a one-man play called Fat Man, which is in some way sort of the polar opposite of Antigone, in that it's one person on their own. It's a very small-scale production.
It's so small-scale. It's by a man named Martin Bonger, and the company is called Move to Stand. And to me, it's a truly heartening example of why fringe theater in not just in London, but in the UK is thriving, and why we there's a duty to support work like this. I think a duty, that sounds terrible. It's hugely entertaining and it's moving. And what he's doing, he's playing Orpheus as a musician turned stand-up, but he's a sad sack, rumpled, disheveled, kind of dirty, sad guy, and he's addressing the audience as the gods. So I was sitting in the front row, and I became Hades, I was Zeus, and Hades was next to me, and but that device of addressing us, the audience, as somebody that he's explaining what happened to, because it's about grief and it's about loss. He's lost Eurydice, Eurydice, however you want to pronounce it, and he doesn't sing, so we don't know what kind of musician he is, but he doesn't need to because the performance sings. Mm. And it meant so much more to me than this big prestige production at the Barbican. And it was just in some little theater on the fringe. And
it is one of those things, isn't it, that you think, a Greek classic, a Greek legend, has to be all bombast and big stage and big production, and yet, of the two,
I prefer the one person, absolutely stripped down, direct, funny, heartrending. It touched me in a way that the Big Bucks production just didn't reach me.
And not just written by Martin Bonger, but performed by him as well.
Yes,
and. Obviously it should go without saying, but a one-man performance, so much rests on that one person's shoulders.
And he absolutely sustained it. He was compelling and witty. It's a bittersweet show, and he manages to walk that tightrope between acidic and truly moving. And the moving part, the emotional side, sneaks up on you, which I also appreciated. And he's funny. He's witty with it. He plays that stand-up character for all that it's worth. And the fat suit.
Okay, so he's got a fat suit
He's got a fat suit, yeah.
When you compare the two, obviously in terms of audiences, then a vehicle which has Juliette Binoche in, it's like you can even call a vehicle, is going to be the one that attracts the big crowds. Is there, without wishing to sort of, cast judgment on what a theatre crowd is, is there something, though, about going to see a one-man production by someone who isn't that well-known that you get more of a sense that everyone there is there for the right reasons?
Well, I saw it in a small fringe space where there was such a collective spirit in the room, and it didn't cost very much, and it was the bottom end of a triple bill. And
whereas if this was 40 quid and on at the Barbican and there are 500 people in the audience, it might be a bit different.
And because that experience, which I don't want to knock, because I love West End shows and big shows and et cetera, too, and they have their place. But there's an expectation there that you don't get out of fringe theater. And I personally love the intimate, the quirky, the hole in the wall, the DIY, which is a lot of what fringe theater represents. And yet the work that's made there can be of such a high standard, and it can matter. And in this case, that smaller, much, much, infinitely smaller budgeted piece mattered more to me than the big show. And it's just going to happen. Sometimes those big shows can be very hollow.
Mm.
But they don't feed you on that other, soulful level.
But the big shows find it far easier to find a big audience.
Oh, of course. And that's, it was ever thus and will ever be thus. So, Antigone with Binoche is going to the Edinburgh Festival. It'll play the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and it's got all these different partnerships. And again, I don't want to beat it or about the head too harshly, but I just know how I felt and what the work that I surrendered to more was the small scale piece.
which will next be seen in Gainsborough and then in Harrogate, which if you're outside of England, those names will mean almost nothing to you.
But I think Fat Man will have a life, and with any luck, it may go internationally. You just never know what kind of breaks these small shows have.
Okay, finally, let's move on to dance. A new production of Jerome Bell's 2001 creation, The Show Must Go On. We've got a short clip of a previous performance of this from a few years ago in Philadelphia. Picture a group of people all listening to individual music players, and have a listen to this.
I'm still standing.
I like to move it, move it.
I am a woman.
I'm bad.
I'm bad. I'm a lover, baby.
That was a short clip of Jerome Bell's The Show Must Go On. Donald, for those of us that aren't familiar with Jerome Bell's work and particularly with this show, what was going on there?
What was happening is a group of people, they all had their little iPods and their headphones on, and they were listening to individual tracks and singing along with them occasionally, tunelessly and
very tunelessly.
Randomly. The whole show is predicated on, it reminds me of what the Noel Coward line about extraordinary how potent cheap music is from Private Lives. It's a series of tracks that are played by a DJ who is down in the stalls one by one, and he pushes the button and the machine opens and he puts the track in, taken literally, so that when the show starts, we hear Maria and Tony singing Tonight, you know, setting up that expectation, and then Let the Sun Shine In when the light comes on, Come Together when the cast of, in this case, 22 people first appear, and then Bowie's Let's Dance, and when Bowie sings Let's Dance, they start dancing. So it's all taken very, very literally, which is funny. It's a simple premise, but where the you know, profundity comes in this case, and the inspired choice of the company that has revived this 2001 conceptual classic by Jerome Bell is it's by Canduco, an integrated company, meaning that it's disabled and non-disabled dancers. And so members of that company, plus non-professionals and professionals recruited from anywhere, some of whom have danced before, some of them have never danced before. And they're very mixed in terms of size, race, color, shape, and whether or not they're disabled. And it's a vision of not what society should be, but what it is. But it's also great entertainment. And that's what I loved about this show and what the audience picks up on. It reminds me of what Pauline Kael, the great late film critic, said about Bonnie and Clyde. She said, the audience is alive to it, to that film. In a similar way, for a live show, the audience that I was with at Sadler's Wells a few weeks ago was so alive to this show because they know this music most of the time. They get the joke right away. They enjoy watching people plunging into dance who are so varied.
And does the style of dance change as the music changes, or dramatically?
Not really. It's one of those pieces that, you know, Britain is very much a leader in terms of community dance. So it's very much a community dance piece. Anybody could dance to this because it's about surrendering to that cheap, potent pop music. And so it's funny and has a way of gathering an audience on its side. And in the bits, for instance, there's John Lennon's Imagine and the other track, I forget, but there's a sing-along in the dark that the audience does. Nobody tells them to do that. They just do it because we belong with those people up on that stage. They're
definitely
a
not,
mirror
definitely
for
definitely
us.
Not one person who's from the show who's in the audience who starts singing and encourages everyone else.
No, okay. It's in the house that does it. And it's such fun. And it has, reminds me of Fat Man. I was unexpectedly moved by it. I was touched by it, by how open emotionally the audience was to it, but it's because they were seeing that happen on stage. So it's in a funny way, it's this balance between being quite calculated and quite tongue-in-cheek, but absolutely transparent in what it's doing. There's also a great moment when the DJ gets up on stage and dances to Private Dancer. And it's like being given a gift. And you know what? The guy can really boogie. And then he goes back, he stops, and completely emotionally goes on, unemotionally goes on with his job as technician. And I think that crossover of the fourth wall of the technician is also another little glimmer that we're all together in this. So it's very conspiratorial.
So if there's a lesson for today from those three productions, it's don't necessarily go for the big and go for the small, which you can put your heart into.
Go for the thing that connects. Yes, only connect.
Only connect. There we are. That brings us to the end of today's show. Donald Hutera, critic and arts writer for The Times. Thank you very much indeed. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. Our producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for this week's books review. But for the time being, thanks for listening.